Morning. How are you doing this morning? Did you actually listen to that prayer that Mark prayed? I was listening and I got scared all of a sudden because of what he said. And if I was just doing this on my own strength, I'd be in real trouble. Good thing whatever happens this morning, it's going to be the Holy Spirit that does it, not me. I know one of our favorite series as a church is the Taboo series, which we do in the spring. And after this past spring, I got an email from one of the guys in our church, and he said to me, he goes, "Hey, Brent, I've got a suggestion for one of the next topics maybe that you could do in Taboo." And he went on to say, he says this, "I'd like you to consider talking about how we give and our obligation to give to provide for the poor, because it's something that I find most people don't like to talk about." And in our Taboo series, that's what we talk about. We talk about things that oftentimes we don't like to talk about them. And so that's kind of been rolling back in the back of my mind, that email. And as we entered into October and I was looking at what we needed to preach on and what we needed to talk on, just want to remind you that at the end of the month, we're hosting a conference that's being put on by International Justice Mission. And it's the conference, Jesus and Justice. And I thought, you know what, it would be a great tie-in for us to talk about some of the justice issues of our world and help prepare you in case you're going to go to that conference, which is going to be an amazing conference. And I encourage you to consider going to it the last weekend of October. But one of the things that we look at when we talk about social justice is poverty. And I don't know if I've ever preached a message on poverty before. I have talked about the poor, but to really focus in on poverty. And I think on some level, there is some discomfort for us to talk about this issue. I mean, what do you do? What thoughts do you have when you pull up to the red light in Langley and you see the panhandler in the middle of the island? Do you look away trying to not have eye contact so that he won't look at you? Do you roll down your window and grab some loose change and give it to him? Do you look to see if you have a granola bar that you can pass out the window as food to him? What do you do? Or what do you do when you're flipping through on TV and you come across that station that is showing a program that has, you know, a little kid who's malnutritioned, the extended belly or lame or sores just oozing? You know, that TV show that it seems to be designed to elicit pity or maybe even guilt to force you to give. What's your thought processes when you see that? And then what do you think about when you read things like, and this may not even be true, but it's probably close enough, that when 3 billion people in our world live on less than $2 a day? When you read stuff like that, do you have the thoughts, you know what, there's just something not right with our world when we live in such luxury and wealth compared to that? That when people who, if they do not work today, will not be able to eat today, kind of thing. How do you think that through that type of poverty? And then you mix it in with, you know, kind of the rage that is in our culture right now of social justice. It's the thing to do, whether it's human trafficking or peace and reconciliation or equality. You know, all those things are floating out there in our North American culture as things that, you know, we're being pushed to make sure we're on board with and on the bandwagon with. And yet I think if you really consider social justice and you're to take a step back and look at it from a global perspective, I think one of the biggest social justice issues that our world faces is the alleviation of poverty. And how do we help our world face and tackle this significant issue? And as Christians, what's our role in this? What's our duty? What does the Bible say about poverty? Some of you maybe when you start talking about these social justice issues, the verse that jumps to your mind is Micah 6:8. So I just want to read it to you. Micah 6:8 says this, he, and it's talking about God. God has showed you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. This is set in the context of God speaking to the nation of Israel, and they have gone so far astray from God, they are not following him in any ways. Their actions are not what they should be. And the prophet Micah is reminding them and calling them back, saying, look, this is what God expects of you as his people, to act justly, or as some versions say, to do justice, and to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. Today, I want to just spend some time thinking through that call of the prophet to love mercy and how it relates to poverty. When Micah calls us and challenges us, speaking God's word, to love mercy, what is he saying there? You see, mercy, biblically defined in this passage, is compassion for the miserable. Mercy is that thing that pushes us and drives us and compels us to act with compassion towards those who need compassion. Here's the problem that the Israelites face, and I think partly some of the problem that we face. You can't love mercy and not act. Jesus fleshes out, I think, this idea of what it means to love mercy when he says some things in Matthew 25. Matthew 25 and verses 35 and 36 says this. So this is the picture of what loving mercy actually looks like. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. What is Jesus saying there? I think he's saying there, you can't claim to act justly. You can't claim to love mercy, and you definitely can't claim to walk humbly with God if all your claims are not backed up with actions. The Bible goes on to tell us that our faith or our beliefs are dead if there is no action associated with them. I believe many of you read Micah 6:8, and you honestly want to live out what God is calling you to live out. You want to live a lifestyle that God says is a good lifestyle. You want to live with justice. You want to love mercy, and you want to walk humbly with him. And yet, when it comes to this issue of poverty, I think here's the tension that many of us deal with and many of us is faced. How do I know that my generosity, that my giving to the poor is not going to be wasted? I mean, you have the thought, right? If you ever give money to the panhandler, the thought that most of us think is this guy or is this woman going to turn around and go to the liquor store and buy a Mickey? Or if it comes to global things, like you're challenged to give global crisis, you think, if I write a $100 check and send it into that ministry or that, you know, nonprofit or whatever it is, how much of that $100 actually makes it to that kid in the village? Is it $6? Is it 10 cents? Is it $50? What is it? Is it really worth it for me to give this to that? Or is it just a big waste of money? And then there's the other side of when we give, the negative side of charity sometimes is when, as givers, we give and the recipients who start off being grateful for the gift, but if they come back and they ask for another one, or you try and give them another one, and that attitude moves from gratitude to expectation and then even entitlement. And for those of us who've been involved with people who have needs, we understand this attitude of entitlement. And so we struggle with this tension of, am I giving and enabling them? So how do I be wise with what God has given me to steward? How do I be wise? How do I make good decisions in order to help the poor as the Bible tells us to? I think one of the issues we face in our culture is that for most of us, if we have not spent time thinking through this through, we actually have no idea. We truly don't understand what poverty really is. And then tied with that, we have no idea how to live out that command biblically. How do you define poverty? Most of you, if I were to ask you that, I think would define it kind of like this. Poverty is the absence of material wealth. That generally is our go-to definition. You can throw in different words, but that's generally, when someone is poor, they don't have what I have. There is an absence of material wealth. And so when we have this as our definition of poverty, this is where it leads to. As North Americans, we look at someone who is in poverty and we say there must be a cause for why they're in that situation. So if I can figure out the cause, then I know the solution. In their book, When Helping Hurts, Steve Corbett and Brian Fickert talk about this and they say, so what happens is if we believe that the primary cause of poverty is the lack of knowledge, what do? We educate, right? We build schools, we pour money into teachers, that kind of thing. If we believe that the primary cause of poverty is the oppression by someone in power, what do? We activate social justice and we try and deal with corruption and we do all that kind of thing. That's where we put our focus. If we believe that a person is in poverty and the primary cause of that poverty is because of lack of material resources, what do? We give them the material resources, right? That's what we do. It seems pretty simple to us, pretty straightforward. And that's how we have approached poverty for the last century at least. And yet, it doesn't seem to be working because we have poured billions and billions of dollars into Africa or India or Asia. And those who are in poverty are no better off now than they were back then, even after all that aid goes in there. So what is the problem? I think it's interesting that Bryant Myers, a Christian development thinker, as I was reading it, pointed out something that I want to just kind of leave for you to think through in terms of poverty. We will never understand poverty if we don't understand our reality. And our reality as Christians is this. We understand that when God created us, He created us for four types of relationships. The first relationship is our relationship with Him, right? He created us so that we could serve and worship Him. The second relationship is with ourselves. A key plank of Christian understanding and worldview is this, that we were created in God's image, and because we were created in His image, we have dignity and we have worth. The third relationship is with others. We were created to be in community with others and live life together. And then the fourth one is we were created to have relationship with God's creation. You see this in Genesis when it talks about our role as stewards of the world. It talks about how we will find fulfillment in our work. All that kind of stuff is our relationship with creation. What Brant Myers talks about is when it comes to poverty, we forget the significant impact that the fall, that sin entering the world has on our four relationships. You see, when sin entered the world, it affected our relationship with God. And so that when sin entered the world, we actually enter into a poverty state in that relationship. And he talks about it as the poverty of spiritual intimacy. When sin entered the world, we no longer have that relationship with God. We are in a poverty situation with God. And what that leads us to do and believe and act is ultimately we end up denying God's existence and His authority. And we generally replace God with other things like materialism or other false idols that run our life. The second thing when sin entered the world, instead of having a right relationship with ourselves, we end up having a poverty of being, is what he calls it. And it is when we don't understand who God created us to be, we don't see ourselves as God created us to be in his image. And what happens is either we get this kind of what he calls God complexes, where we believe we are superior over someone else, or we have some significant self-esteem issues because we don't understand the dignity and self-worth that God has given us. What about that relationship with others? Sin interrupts that. Instead of having an awesome relationship in community, you actually have a poverty of community. Sin works its way into our lives and makes us self-centered. And what we tend to do is be abusive towards others. We tend to exploit others for our own gain. All things that break apart community. And then lastly, we also suffer from the poverty of stewardship. We have a loss of purpose or a loss of sense of purpose. We either become lazy or we become a workaholic. The ground is cursed, so our work is hard. Here's the thing. All of us suffer from some sort of poverty in our life. It may not be material, but all of us wrestle with the absence of what God really intended our relationships to be. And if we don't understand that as a basis, we will never get to the place where we can actually understand what the poor in our world are going through. You see, the call in Micah 6:8 is the call for us to extend justice and mercy to others because we have experienced justice and mercy through Jesus Christ. That's the great thing about Micah 6:8. Is that as Christians, we actually can live this verse out. We can do justice. We can love mercy. We can walk humbly with God because of what Jesus has done for us, and we've experienced that. And that needs to be the foundation of what we build on when it comes to poverty and the poor. I was struggling to try and think of how do I explain to you or get you to understand what poverty is when most of us don't live in that situation. And many of us probably don't even know people who are actually in true poverty. You see, we live in a society that is blessed with wealth. Here's the reality check for us sitting here today. Most of you, any of you who were born in North America, there is only one thing different between you and the man or the woman or the child who is in extreme poverty in somewhere place else in the world. And you know what that is? Is grace. The only reason you are not in poverty is because you were born in North America. I love the quote that Mark Lutz in his book on poverty says, "Extreme poverty is primarily a function of latitude and longitude, not laziness or the lack of ambition." For those of us who have lived our entire life in North America, we don't even realize the advantages that we have. We just take them for granted. The access to education, the access to clean water, the ability to actually go out and get a job, the ability to access credit, the ability to have a safety net of even just welfare and a food bank. Those are things that we think are just rights for everyone. And we don't even realize that we live our life in such a way that we believe we have choices, we can make choices, and we actually have the ability, if we work hard enough, to change our situation. The poor in this world do not have any of that. I One of the best illustrations of poverty that I came across was this. Think about a spider web. And imagine that you catch yourself in a spider web. And what happens when you get caught in a spider web? The more you move, the more struggle you do, the more entangled you become. And soon you get to the point where it is better just to lie still than to move, because the more you move, it just brings more misery into your life. And yes, you hate your situation, but you really have no choice. You're stuck. You have no ability on your own to get out of that situation. And that's when 1 John 3:17 comes at us. When we understand that above poverty, when we understand that about the poor, what does 1 John 3:17 say? If anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need, but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? If anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need, but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? We live in a tension, I think, as Christians in a Canadian culture, especially in Langley, especially in Murrayville, where we struggle with what our response should be to the poor, because we have a hard time even understanding poverty. How do we show mercy? How do we live out Micah 6:8 and actually love mercy to the point where it comes through us and into our out of our lives into those around us? How do we do that? I want to suggest three things this morning to give you something to think about. First, as Jesus followers, we need to understand and have both a global and local mindset when it comes to poverty. We have to think about both the world and our community. In 2 Corinthians chapter 9, Paul is writing to the Corinthian church, and he's reminding them of a promise that they had made. They had promised that they would take up an offering, a collection, and that it would be taken up before Paul would come, so that when Paul got there, they would give it to him. And the purpose of that collection was so that Paul could take it to the believers in Jerusalem who were facing some significant trials. And you have this picture of a church in Corinth having a global perspective. And we are no different as a church here at Southridge. We take our commitment globally very seriously. That's why we have partnered with Starfish in Haiti. And we have made a commitment to adopt the village of Palmier. And through that commitment, we have a strategy to help that village come out of poverty. And currently, this year, one of the focus that we have for our adopted village is that we want to build a school for them, because yes, helping kids get education helps them take that step out of poverty. And so in October is our Global Focus Month, and if you were here last week, you heard that we have a target goal of $60,000 to help meet our global objectives as a church. $33,000 of that 60 will go towards that school to help provide a place for those kids to get educated and also receive a meal every day. Part of our goal is to build a church in Palmier, and that we're raising some of the money this year, hopefully, and then next year we're going to come back and raise the rest of it. We also, as part of our commitment, is to do work in Mexico, and we've been building some houses for families that don't have homes. And part of that money, $60,000, is to meet that. What I'm asking you this morning is, I'm asking you to consider what God would want you to give to meet that global need that our church is trying to meet. And I'm not just talking to the older adults here. I'm talking to the teenagers too and the young adults. Is God asking you to give $5 or maybe $20 or $100 towards this? $60,000 seems like a significant goal, right? Most of us, I think, would agree to that if we were trying to do it on our own. But this is what I know, that if everyone went to God and asked them, should I give to this? And he said yes, and he gave you a number. If everyone actually gave what God asked them to give, we would have more than enough to meet this need. I believe that to the depths of my heart. Maybe for others of you, you have other global passions, commitments that you have, and maybe it's, you know, giving money to gain so that wells can be dug in Africa to supply clean water. Or maybe it's working with Opportunity International and helping them provide microfinancing for women and children and the poor in our world to get a step ahead. Maybe it's helping FAIR, our own fellowship disaster relief agency that goes in when disasters come to help those in need. Or maybe it's compassion and you sponsor a child. What I'm asking you is don't forget that we as Jesus followers have responsibilities globally. We also have them locally. That's the second thing I want you to think about this morning is this. Second, when it comes to a local mindset, we have to have both a corporate and personal response. So as a church, we have a corporate responsibility to our community. That's why last year we partnered with James Hill Elementary, an elementary school here in Murrayville. When you drive around in Murrayville, you think, oh yeah, middle class Langley. Why would there be needs in Murrayville? But the reality is at James Hill, there are many kids that come to that school who come hungry because they haven't even eaten that day. And so we've partnered with the school to provide a breakfast program. We have Dinner in Elegance that provides meals in downtown Langley every week. We have people who serve at Gateway of Hope to make meals every week to help have just to feed people who need something to eat. When you give just to our general budget, some of that money goes to those things. And we have volunteers that serve, but we're always looking for more. We also do something as a church called the Benevolence Fund. We have a dedicated fund that's set aside to help people who are in need, and you can give it to that fund. When we first established this fund, we kind of set a minimum balance that we wanted to try and keep so that whenever a need came in, we had money to help the need. So what we would do is when that fund dipped below that kind of minimum balance, I would stand up on a Sunday that we had the Lord's Supper and we had already taken the offering. But at the Lord's Supper, I'd say, we're going to take a second offering today. And what I'd like you to do is to consider what you could give to the Benevolence Fund. Maybe it's just the $5 in your wallet or the 20, just throw it in. Maybe it's some quarters in your pocket. Whatever it is, whatever God moves you, throw it in and we take up a secondary offering. Let me ask you, how many of you here have ever experienced that offering? Hands up. I want to see. Like there's maybe 5 or 6 of you here. Do you know why? We have not taken up one of those offerings since we moved into this building. The reason for that is we have a number of people who give to the Benevolence Fund on a regular basis. So that even though we give money away in benevolence, there is always more than what our minimum is. And part of me goes, yes, that's awesome. We have people who God has placed on their heart to do that. But part of me also goes, man, that's a missed opportunity for our church. Because when we call for a benevolence offering, that means everyone has the opportunity to give. When we never call for it, people don't even think about it. And I'm trying to weigh which is better. To be honest, here's the tension we face with local opportunities, having a local mindset with a personal and corporate response. The tension is that we can fall into the trap and believe that we fulfill God's command to help the poor without ever having a personal response beyond just giving money. Let me reread 1 John 3:17 for you. If anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need, but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? When we read that verse, I don't know about you, but I tend to focus on the first part. If anyone has material possessions, I check the box. Yep, that's me. And then I go, there's a need. If I don't meet it, what does that say about me? What I skip over is that second part. When you see a brother, or you could put sister in there. You know what is implied in that verse? It's implied that you're in community so that you actually know the need that is being presented. Many of us don't even know the needs that are around us. So here's my third challenge for you this morning. We must move from a do-for mentality to a do-with lifestyle. Here's the tension, I think, for most of us. Most of us don't even realize the poverty around us. I was having a conversation with my friend Doris this week, and she's involved in a lot of poverty initiative stuff. And she reminded me that the visible poverty that we see in Canada usually is derived from either addiction or mental health issues. That's the visible poverty that we see on the streets oftentimes. Often homelessness, other things that are going on. I'm not saying it's always that, but often it's addiction issues or mental health issues. What she then said to me really caught me. She said to me, in our Canadian context, poverty is played out in isolation. It means that those that we don't see, there is a shame attached to poverty, that they are not willing to be in community with others for the fear that the community will find out what their true need is. And poverty in Canada often occurs in isolation, behind closed doors, and we never see it. And the only way we ever see that is when we're actually in community with someone. And they are willing to open up with us to tell us their actual financial situation, their actual situation that has created them in them this poverty. So how do we move from this do-for mentality to a do-with lifestyle? Right? How do we do that? Some of it may have to do with stop giving handouts. That's a do-for mentality, right? Just hand out the money and then walk away. Instead of just do handouts, I think we need to concentrate on a little bit more of investment. How do you invest in that person's life? That's a do-with lifestyle. We have to understand the difference between relief giving and or emergency giving, when someone has a crisis that they need that, and giving that results in entitlement or expectation. And how do we help someone move out of poverty in a smart and wise way? I think there's two things that we need to consider, that you need to consider if you're going to actually take this challenge up of moving to a do-with lifestyle. I don't believe you can live out the do-with lifestyle. I don't believe you can actually fulfill the words of Micah 6:8 and love mercy unless you do these two things. One, be hospitable. To be hospitable, you have to invite someone into your life. You see, the ability to be hospitable has nothing to do with the size of your home. It has everything to do with the willingness to initiate a relationship with someone and invite them into your space. Secondly, you got to be generous. The ability to be generous has nothing to do with the size of your bank account. It has everything to do with the size of your heart and your willingness to meet a need. I don't think we can get to the place where we have a do-with lifestyle without practicing hospitality and living a generous lifestyle. I have shared this story before, but one of the most significant moments of me learning how to be generous was actually happened in the country of Bolivia. Pam and I were there as part of a team, and we were working at a camp. And on this particular day, a car drove in, and a man and his wife got out of this car and called Rod, who was our missionary, over and talked to him. And then Rod came and gathered the team and said, "Hey, guys, I need to introduce you to this guy. He's a pastor." And he pastors not just one church, but he pastors several churches. They're rural churches. He drives around and meets them. And when he heard that a team from Canada was coming to do some work and help the church in Bolivia move forward, he decided that he needed to go to his church and thank us for that. And so what did he do? He opens up the trunk and he pulls out this big sack, places it on the ground and opens it up. And in this sack are oranges. Now, the power of the story is not really felt until you understand that in Bolivia, at this time of year when we were there, it was not orange season. You see, the pastor had gone around and went to all his churches. He had gone door to door to the people of his church, and he had knocked on their door, and he told them about this team from Canada coming to help them, and that they needed to give something to us as a gift, just out of generosity. And so what do those people in his churches do? They didn't go out to the tree in their yard and pick the orange off their tree and give it to them. They went into their house, into their cupboards, and looked for the oranges that they had picked weeks before, and that they were saving for their eating, and gave one or two or three oranges to the pastor. And as he went from house to house, the sack got filled. And here he is giving it to these Canadians who have no need for oranges. There wasn't a dry eye on the team as we realized what true generosity is really like. It has nothing to do with how much you have. It has to do with if you're willing to use what God has given you to bless someone else. You will never be able to live out, I don't believe, Micah 6:8, to love mercy especially and show it to the poor in our world until we understand that we have a global and local responsibility, that we have a corporate and personal responsibility, and that God calls us not to just do for someone, but actually do with someone who is in that situation. Let me pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for this morning. And Lord, you know I've struggled with this message this week and trying to figure out how to communicate your heart out of Micah 6:8 and how to communicate to us who live in a culture where we don't often see poverty, especially when we're not looking for it, who often our family or our friends have no connection with poverty in terms of what they struggle with. And so God, my prayer is this, that you just have simply opened our eyes this morning to your command that we would meet the needs of the poor, and that through that opening of our eyes, we would be challenged by you to consider ways that we could personally be involved in living out that command that you have given every believer and every church in this world. In Jesus' name, amen.